Alec, since your son is hit the 1 year mark, are you going to try to become like a daddy influencer or anything?
Yes. Yes. I'm making TikToks now. No, I mean, do we want to do one? Just go ahead.
I've been recording since moment you entered in.
I'm still setting up fucking Audacity.
That's fine.
Give me one more second, dude. It's
constant. That's all right. Bullshit. Maya, are you able to record natively?
I don't think so. I'm not on a normal PC, so I don't have anything on this one. This is my, like, I don't know if I told you this, but I had a gaming laptop while it was on sale. And so I haven't really, like, experimented, uploaded anything with this one. But this one has a battery life than my normal computer, so.
Very professional of me.
Have you, is it still a PC, or did you switch over to Mac, or?
No, this is still a Windows. Do you think I could get a Mac to run literally any game ever?
No,
barely run Tetris.
Yeah, that's why I was asking. I was like, all the Mac games that I'm able to play are like strategic board game simulators.
Yeah.
Man, I'd really love to play like the new Dragon Age or something on this.
No, I've been playing Lies of P constantly. That is the only thing I wanted to play for like the past 3 weeks.
I finally got, on your recommendation, I borrowed a Nier Automata. It's so weird. Like, after playing Stellar Blade, I'm like, yeah, I've seen all this. Like, there needs to be something new.
I feel like if you've played Nier, you don't want to play Stellar Blade. And then if you played Stellar Blade, you don't want to play Nier.
Yeah. I mean, it's fun. It's a great thing to, like, mindlessly. I just finally unlocked fast travel. So now I'm like less bitter about the game.
Yeah.
Like, really dive into it.
I will say
sexy robot games.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Look, I will say that I told Connor this when I played the demo for Stellar Blade. I'm sorry. I was like brain turned off hot lady. And then the minute her jiggle physics came into play, I was like, and I'm shut down. I'm out of it.
Angel would like come into the room. She'd be like, what the fuck are you playing? And I'm like, it's not what you think. I'm only playing for the robots. Like, trust me.
Speaking of discourse, I mean, there was quite a bit of discourse around that game. And then I was like, what are they complaining about? What the fuck? This is like literally made by them for them, right? Like horny dudes.
Yeah.
What were people upset about?
Was it over sexualization in general?
There weren't enough boobies. And they covered up some of the boobies.
They censored her, and then the other people were like, she's barely covered at all.
Wow. So one side says there's too many boobies, the other side says there's not enough boobies. And I'm playing it being like, wow, the story's really deep.
this is the endless cycle, dude.
Well, hey everybody, it is it's been a while.
It's Sunday, December 8th at 10 a.m.
Welcome to Propaganda. The Sunday, December 8th at 10 a.m. Connor here, joined as always by Alec. And today we've got a great guest. Please welcome my friend and classmate, Maya. Hey, Maya. Thank you for joining us this morning.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Of course. So today, Alec, did you have anything you wanted to get into before we got into the topic?
I've been talking about gun stuff because of the unfortunate accident that occurred in Manhattan with the United Healthcare CEO. And so lots of people have been asking very stupid questions about guns, and I'm an ex like gun nut. So I was answering questions about subsonic ammunition and recoil operated Browning style pistol actions and the use of suppressors. But we're not going to go into that. We're not going to do gun autism because we'll be here all fucking day.
Listeners at home, it's been the Thanksgiving holidays. We've been so busy. And Alec and I have not, like, you would think, listeners, that Alec and I see the headline about the United Healthcare CEO and we're immediately calling each other. Listener, would it surprise you to know that we didn't talk for like 3 or 4 days after it happened? So I did not get a chance to ask you, like, hey, how easy is it to get a silencer for what looks to be a veterinarian gun?
Apparently pretty easy. I mean, anyway. Oh, by the way, so other point of order, I'm not stripping on camera. The listeners can't see this, but I am wearing my ironic Kamala shirt, which my liberal friend sent to me to own me because, of course, I'm a burnout, a Bernie dead ender. And during that period post Biden dropout, when the vibes were extremely high and everybody's like, the coconut mommy's going to save us, he sent me this ironic T-shirt, which I would not wear out in public because it's annoying. And now It's extra ironic, and I will be wearing it out in public.
Yeah, you have to wear it whenever you see your friend next and bring him a box of tissues or something.
Yeah.
Anyway, enough ironic, you know, coping. Maya.
Wait, so point of order real quick. So Maya, one thing that's interesting about your paper to me, right, is that Connor's like less this way, but I'm like 35 now, and I have just made the hard decision that I'm not engaging with anything basically post Twitter. Right. I don't have I think I have an Instagram, but like I don't use it. I have a TikTok, so like occasionally I can look at links, but I'm not on it. So I see some of the stuff that we're gonna talk about, these tradwife influencers, I see like as that kind of percolates down through the internet culture to Twitter and people make fun of it. Right. And then like the greater ecosystem of what that's happening within, I'm really like ignorant of. And I think a lot of people are. Maybe they like know, you mentioned a couple of the actual content creators, right, in your paper. And like, I'd have to Google them and I'd like, oh yeah, that's that lady. Oh yeah, that's the cereal lady, right? But other than that, I have no idea who these people are or like what they're about. So this is very helpful. By the way, we'll link to the paper, presumably in the show notes, Connor?
Yeah, we can. I mean, Maya, if you're okay with us like hosting it somewhere online.
Or if not, we will cut that.
Yeah.
The good news about like the controversy on all this stuff is that from what I can glean, the most rabid, like Groiper style, like little Nazi freaks on the internet, like strangely hate these women. I probably just because they're women.
Because remind me, I forget. I'm technically the youngest here. How do you guys know what the cottagecore aesthetic is?
Kind of.
Yeah. I know what the aesthetic is.
It's like sweaters and knitting, right?
I understand. This is like me trying to like explain to my mom like what I'm studying, and she's like, okay, sure, sweetie. Anyway, do you want dinner now? The cottagecore aesthetic is like a very like quick intro to what this is. Basically, imagine like farmhouses, picnics, like very much like early girl core of like, I would say like 2005 maybe, where it's like, reject modernity, go back to like being out and frolicking in the fields, like a Monet painting, basically.
This is related to the original tradwife meme, right? The flower print lady cartoon. That's
kind
like the aspirational goal of all of these like little chuds.
So cottagecore itself is more of the like, I like the gingham dresses. I like the, you know, the more traditionally feminine silhouettes of certain cuts. I like, you know, bright colors, light colors that, you know, like think strawberry, think like ribbons, all of these types of like visual signifiers, think florals, kind of stuff like that. Like your grandma's curtains is the best way I can describe cottagecore. And I mean this as someone who likes it. So don't come for me if you like cottagecore.
No? Doilies like two
doilies
grandma?
Are, yes. Okay. No, doilies are part of it. Yeah. Like lace, all of these things that like, you would find at a vintage store, right? Like a grandma dumped all of her collection and everyone is like going through it and sifting. Cottagecore has been infested by Nazis. Like they latch on to that as like, and I read an article, I can send it to you guys later. I didn't link it in my paper, but there's an article done by, I believe she's a student journalist. And she talks about how when she was looking at these like cottagecore pages and stuff, a lot of them were like, hey, careful, Nazis get here too. So it's kind of like they try and latch onto it because it's all of these like traditionally feminine things. And they're like, hey, do you know what else is traditionally feminine and also super white? Look at this. And it's like, no.
German women in the 1930s.
Yeah. Your paper primarily focuses on ballerina farms, but I have some notes on other influencers and their connections.
So cottagecore predates the tradwife aesthetic or content. The cottagecore stuff, is it pictures? Are these like Pinterest reels of like, this dress is cute and like old timey? Or are we already putting like black suns behind, I don't know, like ladies in dresses or something?
So I will say this, cottagecore and these types of like core aesthetics arose out of the like COVID-19 pandemic. Like I think it's impossible to talk about this idea of like cottagecore, whim, like what is it, gremlin core, all of these like other insert like pirate core, whatever you want to put before core, without acknowledging like COVID-19 as the like, oh, people are trying to latch onto a certain subset or style that defines a personality, particularly during a time when a lot of these young people lost, I don't want to say the ability to, but it's like we gain personal style by interacting with others around us. Like I know a lot of how I dress is influenced by my friends who I'm like, oh, you wear really cool stuff. Like I want to kind of mimic you in a way. And then eventually as I've gotten older, I've like collected pieces from like, oh, like this is what I wore in high school and I'm getting older and I have to dress for like corporate communications or whatever. Like then I start bridging these styles and I make my own personal style. Cottagecore really arose during a time when people didn't have that. And so they were gaining influence from TikTok specifically, if that made any sense.
If I'm getting this right, would you say that cottagecore is the form and tradwiving is the function?
Maybe. I will say they originated from like two different.
Okay.
I would highly advise that like don't conflate cottagecore with tradwifery. They're very different subsets of the internet. However, they draw on a very similar virtual aesthetic.
Gotcha.
Because both revolve around like sunlight and the outdoors and baking bread and flowers and linen dresses. And so they are similar in the sense of their visual language, but they are separate in terms of what is expected.
And just for the listener, if we were to imagine the actual content that cottagecore is, right, it's pictures of ladies in these gingham dresses in like fields against like fences or like these basically like a Cotswolds Airbnb picture where there's like a small looks like an English maybe like literal cottage with like flowers around it, right, in like springtime or summertime, and you know, with like moss growing up between like rocks on a path, right? Like this is what does this sound like what cottagecore is?
Yeah, I would
the
say
picture
so.
I have in my mind is like a cat on like a knit blanket and then like a book. And then it has something of like, you know, COVID's allowed us to turn all our phones off and now I'm doing this, right? Or something. is that right? Or is it like closed focused and then just like a house and that gives you an idea of what like
so,
clothes to buy?
Again, it depends on how well you attach yourself to the label. Some of it is clothing. I would say a lot of my interest in cottagecore relies along the side of clothing and fashion. Some take it as a lifestyle where it's like all aspects of me culminate into cottagecore. It, again, it's like any other type of subculture or group. Your personal attachment to it depends on how much time you invest into it and what exactly are you looking to gain from it.
Are there people that have taken cottagecore or, I mean, probably not tradwifing, but the cottagecore thing, are there people who are like, for Instagram, they're like, hey, I built a hobbit hole and I live in, or like, because that's kind of the vibe, right? Is like,
I mean, I'm sure that some people have, like, for example, if you look at, you know, vintage aesthetics online, some people go out to remodel their entire homes to look like a 1930s, 1940s home, yeah. Where it's like, I've seen people online where it's like, I have an old home and here's all this paint. I'm going to strip the paint to remove like, you know, and show you what the actual wood look like. Mm-hmm. And so again, it depends on how committed you are. I don't want to use the word committed because whatever, but it's the whole idea of like how far entrenched are you? Like what exactly do you want to gain out of this? For me, it might be fashion. For someone else, it might be a lifestyle surrounding this like priority of like being into nature and wearing these lovely dresses and spending time baking bread and foraging and all of these different things. It truly depends on like how much do you attach yourself to it.
I had this temporary like fascination with these influencers, foreign influencers, basically, who are like returning to ancient ways or agricultural ways of living. And one of which is the Chinese influencer Li Ziqi. There's also, man, Slavic country, but it's like this old lady and her old husband that live on a farm and they're just like creating.
Oh, they're Azeri. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah.
They live in Azerbaijan. Which is not a Slavic country. It's a Turkic country.
I deeply apologize. Maya, if you weren't on the show,
Turks. Yeah. Those are Turks. They're not us. Okay. Those are Turks.
I apologize, Alec.
We're cutting that, by the way. That's getting cut. Oh, wait. Hold on, Connor.
Yeah.
I remember, way before I ever saw cottagecore, tradwife shit, I remember from, this is literally over a decade ago, from 4chan, they did this to Taylor Swift. Whenever the little Nazi guys, like the youth Nazi guys, were obsessed with Taylor Swift and they were like, she's the like white savior, they were doing her in these like, there was a period in her, I guess, career where she was wearing these like, look, she was not wearing a bra and she's got these like, I don't know what that is, like, what is that, mesh? I have no idea about clothes. That's the problem. like these like wispy dresses and right. stuff. And she's like in, you know, there's like a bookcase behind her that's like old, right? It's antique or some shit. And they were like, this is what a true beautiful white woman is, right? And then of mm-hmm. course she became woke or whatever. They all dropped her, right? She had a song with like, you know, a Latino man and they're like, she's out. We're done.
Well, I bring up these foreign influencers just to raise the point of, is cottagecore, is tradwifing an American phenomenon, or is this, you know, worldwide and where everyone's just longing to escape this global economy and return to tradition?
So I honestly can't really give you a proper answer to that, mainly because my focus was on American tradwifery. And again, cottagecore itself is separate from tradwifery. There is, you know, visual right. overlap, but most of the time, those who ascribe to cottagecore are much more like progressive and liberal. And there is, you know, a difference between the two of them. One of them is very much a fashion focus with some lifestyle influences, and then the trad wife is very much a lifestyle with some fashion influences, if that's kind of, you know, a helpful distinction between the two. But I haven't done enough research on, is this like a, you know, global phenomenon, or is this a just American phenomenon? So unfortunately I can't give you a proper answer.
Okay.
Because I would need to spend more time looking at it.
That's fine. Then in that case, why don't we get into American tradwifery, the meat of your paper? Let's jump into it. Maya, do you want to just kind of give our listeners an overview of what your paper is about?
Yeah. So this was a case study. And so I only really looked at one creator. In this case, it was Hannah Neilman. From the account Ballerina Farm, I took a look at the different techniques in which she used that were present in her content as a way of understanding how aesthetics can lead into ideology. And ideology is, you know, it's a loaded word, but how do I phrase this properly? It's this whole idea of like aesthetics carry behind ideological weight. It's not just there to look pretty.
Yeah, I think for those who have seen Marilyn Manson ironically wearing like Nazi regalia, take a look at where his politics are right now to see that there was always something lurking underneath.
So, yeah. So like the progression that I see, Maya, and like Connor, also correct me if I'm wrong, right? Like, is there's a consumer aesthetic or like a personal aesthetic, right? And at the like the very, very like low end of this, right? You're like, I'm going to use this picture of a cottage as wallpaper on my computer and I'm doing nothing else, right? And then you're like, I'll buy some like knit socks or like leg warmers or something. I'll buy a dress, right? And then as you progress down this like, down the spectrum of this pipeline, you're like, I'm going to make my house look like this, right? And that's, I feel like when we, after that, is I feel like when we break into something else, when we're talking about, when this starts to bleed into ideology, where you're like, well, fully actualize into this lifestyle, into this thing that like I've imagined for myself, right? And return to peasanthood, right? Which, by the way, I want to talk about later because it's very funny. There are like actual social impediments to doing that, right? Because it's not easy to live in a cottage, right? Or be right. a trad wife, by the way, right? Again, we're comparing them, and I know you don't want to, but like, I think this works for both, right? And then that clash with society produces certain desires for that society. And that these actually in the content are actually pretty, they're like implied, but correct me if I'm wrong, Maya, it doesn't seem like a lot of this, that actually the content is clearly implying its propagandistic value that's subtle, right? It's not saying the quiet part out loud that like, hey, by the way, you don't see any black people in this cottagecore stuff. Has feminism empowered you, or has it taken away your ability to be, you know, a child-rearing mother that lives in a cute cottage, right? And like knits and bakes sourdough bread, right? Like all of that is on a lower level than like an explicit political ideology.
Real quick, Maya, before you address that, I do need to correct you, Alec. There is a black tradwifer her name is Hannah Lee Yoder. And I've sent you videos of her where she's like laughing about picking cotton and how much she loves to pick cotton.
Oh my God, girl, don't do that.
Like it's, and you know, the videos that where she revealed her politics, she and her white husband are very much like Christian nationalist, and they fully embrace, like there's a lot going on in these videos, listeners, go check them out. But
why would you post your race play on the internet?
I just wanted to point that out, that there are black trad lifers. So I apologize for interrupting. Maya, please, if you could address Alex's questions.
Sorry, could you repeat it once more?
I'm really I don't like that at all. So is the political stuff, right? Basically, how subtle is the political stuff, right? Is this overt or is it kind of implied? And then this like cultural movement that this is a part of is just like, piggybacking off of these like subtle influences, I guess.
From what I've seen, it depends on who the influencer is. For example, in the content that I examined, it's not overt. It is very much present visually. But again, that's not the main focus of this content. The main focus of this content is the action of like, I am breaking bread for my children. I am cooking a meal for my family. I am going to the dairy farm and doing X, Y, and Z thing. Some content is much more like, there's another trad wife, I forget her name. And she is like POV getting ready for my husband, 1950 style. Like that's very overt in terms of like what it's trying to say politically. And so again, it very much depends on who you're looking at. Some of it is very much like outspoken and some of it is, you know, not said out loud. It's very much implied in certain scenarios, or it's not even the main focus at all.
So you would say the content is solely focused on, here's cute videos of me with my baby. Here's me making bread. Here's me making cereal. And then you're like, there seems to be like an odd, subtle political valence to this. And like, if you comment to that, the creator would be like, what the fuck are you talking about? I'm just making bread.
Yeah, it's very much a like, I don't mention my politics here kind of.
Yeah, Hannah Lee Yoder did have to like make a video addressing like, yes, I do love Trump. And here's why. It's like, OK. But Maya, when you're talking about it's just these aesthetics, you did make a point in your paper to mention like, hey, Ballerina Farm uses wooden utensils as a way of like getting you to think like, oh, this is so rustic and this is so classic and I want to return to this. And my fiance, who is not a fan of Ballerina Farms, I'll say, has said, why would you ever want to eat off of a wooden fork or spoon? That's so disgusting. Who wants oatmeal off a wooden spoon? They are gross to clean up. If they soak in water, they're done for.
I mean, yeah, from a food safety perspective, like wood is very porous. You don't like it. Which is why you got to replace wooden cutting boards so often.
They want to be peasants. They need to get back to having like dysentery and like half their kids dying, right? Like,
well, I mean, it's this whole idea that like things were built better back in the day, where it's like, and, you know, taking the time to carve something out of wood is very much more personal than like the plastic spatula I'd get from Walmart. Although I don't really know why you're making oatmeal with the spatula, but like nonetheless, it's this whole idea of like there was time and there was care and, you know, wood's expensive now. It's not a common thing to have anymore when plastic is more readily available and it's a lot cheaper. And it's, you know, can easily be mass produced. The idea of having wooden cutlery does become expensive because it takes a lot more time and wood is not, you know, readily available as it used to be.
Yeah. And it's interesting that a lot of the content comes like a lot of the traditional content comes from the home. And I'd be curious, like, okay, but when you go to the doctor, are you requesting traditional medicine? Are you requesting modern medicine? Do you have a computer? Like, and yet you have a phone. Like, if I'm being like really shitty and trolly. But it does seem like in the kitchen and the home, I am traditional. Everything else, I'm a bit more modern. And there's something politically nefarious to that.
By the way, I have to say, I really loved your... As a dumb dude who does not pick up on like the little micro aesthetic choices of the presentation of these videos, I appreciated the part in the paper where you kind of detail all of the little things that you see in the shot and how they kind of affect like the mood, right? And the, I guess, the vibe, right? If I had to be non.
Yeah, the academically correct term is the vibe.
Is it really? Okay.
I don't really know what else you'd call it.
Yeah,
I found Alec and I have used the phrase vibe-based politics a lot, and I said it in my one of my political classes, and all the PhD students got very mad, and they're like, it's called effective politics. And yet everyone else was just like, no, nope, yeah, we're saying vibe-based. It's vibe-based.
It's vibe-based. Well, no, it's very much vibe-based.
But it really, when you look at like the videos, it really does have that effect where I'm like, oh yeah, this does seem kind of homey. And it's like the countertops aren't marble, right? There's none of that like clean modernism, old-timey windows. There are these like hanging plants, right? There's lots of greenery. There's by the way, in the one video I think that you have a screenshot of, she's making pasta. So there's just like kind of flour around. And like, I bake bread. That's very real, right? But none of that shit's fucking cheap, right? That's not like a KitchenAid fucking pasta maker that she's got. And like, are we ready yet to transition into talking about like the consumerism of this, right? Because that is one, the inception point, it feels like you're telling me, Maya, of like the buy-in, right? Is like, oh, well, one of the ways that I can emulate, right, these videos, these things that I see online, these videos that I like, is I can buy the physical objects that are in that room, right, and put them in my house. Or I could decorate slightly differently to kind of more to enhance the vibe, right, of my fucking shitty rental apartment or whatever.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I mean, we live in a consumerist capitalist society. And so a lot of the things that we see are emulated through what we can attain and purchase. And yeah, one of the big parts of the trad wife aesthetic, if you will, is these visual symbols of consumerism. The plate I'm using, the bowl I'm using, the particular machine I'm using, the color scheme of those objects create a visual cohesive story. You're not using ceramic plates. And if you are using ceramic plates, what color, what texture? All of these things are part of this visual story that goes into creating a cohesive narrative. And so there is a consumerist element of like, what brand are you using? You're not using King Arthur brand flour. Like, what are you using? That way, when I purchase it, if I purchase it, then can I do what you do?
Yeah, I sent a link to the both of y'all, but the New York Times published an article this morning about Ballerina Farms, which is way less critical than your paper, Maya. I'll say that. quite a puff piece.
Imagine
and
that.
Yeah, and they do mention Ballerina Farms specifically has a storefront where you can buy their top selling item right now, protein powder. Ballerina Farms for men. Yeah. Well, her husband is involved in the business as well. So they now make products and sell them so that you too can live the rustic pioneer life of putting protein powder in all of your food.
Just like the ancestors used to do. Creatine powder. So like, cause that's where I see this transition point, right? Like you can buy all these objects and fill your kitchen up with them, right? But then living the lifestyle takes time and money, right? And like, that's where the differences start to appear, right? Like,
I mean, that's the promise, right? That if you buy these things, you will acquire what I have that you don't, which is time and money and energy. Like, let's not forget, a lot of us are working like 9 to 5, and that's lucky if we can leave the clock at 5, right? Like if I can physically leave my workplace at 5 o'clock. Most of us stay over. There's always something to finish. There's always something that, you know, never gets done on time. And it's this idea that like, if I have X thing, I will acquire what you have that I don't, which is time and energy to get up. Like how many of us like come back home and it's like, I have enough energy to cook a full meal that day. And it's like, this is what is missing. And this is the void that this type of thing fills. It's again, it's this whole like paradoxical, like this is the paradox of Tradwife. And I mentioned this, it's this idea that if you buy things, you will have access to the stuff that you lack. But in doing so, you give up whatever it is that you currently have. It's this idea that I can stay home and I can cook and raise my children and you can't. And therefore, if you want what I have, you give it up. But in doing so, I can still be an influencer and make money, but you can't. Or if you do, then you fall into the same thing.
Well, my question for you, Maya, would be, how does Ballerina Farms do it? How does she have the time? Why can she do what we can't do?
Let's talk about the lies.
Do you want me to be super like, yes. This is a point blank. It's because her husband has access to money. That's it. That's really what it is. for those who don't know, he is the son of the CEO of JetBlue, which is a multi-billion dollar company. And it's because of this. It's the access to wealth. And there's this whole idea that like those who have wealth will engage in tasks that take up a lot of time because it shows that they have access to leisure. And it's this idea of showing that they can engage in these long and arduous and leisurely tasks and say, I can do this for fun, indicates that they are wealthy.
Yeah. They also recently purchased a $400,000 auto milking machine for their cows that has micro data such as like, hey, how many steps does this cow get in today? How have their chewing habits been going with grass? And so like, it's so like running a farm is so difficult and time consuming. My mom got away from her family farm. My fiance got away from their family farm because it sucks shit to work on a farm. And so, of course, their access to billions of dollars lets their farm run very efficiently where robots are doing their job for them and undoubtedly laborers that they hire. But they have like 11 kids, so maybe they're making their kids work too.
I love that they have fucking Aura rings for cows. That's very funny.
Fitbit for cow.
Yeah. One on each of their little udders so they can see like, how they're doing.
So a bit of personal background, right? Like my mom basically grew up in a fucking peasant village like outside of Warsaw, right? So like I've been back there and that basically that lifestyle doesn't exist anymore, right? Like nobody's really like hawking it in the fields in the way that people even were doing when my mother was born in like the 50s. But farming still exists, right? Both here and in abroad, right? And to the degree that that farming resembles anything that any kind of lifestyle that we Americans in the 21st century would recognize, it's like you say, Connor, it's been highly automated, right? So it does always strike me as so funny whenever people are basically LARPing as peasants, right? They're like, I want to go back to the time when we didn't have TVs in our household and there was like a coal brick oven in my, you know, 2-room cottage where we would get like carbon monoxide poisoning and the baby would die. Right. Like that's crazy. Right. Like sausages hang. Right. Like Chinese influencers. By the way, I really like Chinese food. So like I watch a lot of this stuff and they make like sausage at home. It's a tremendous amount of work. Right. Like nobody has time to actually do this outside of this kind of content creation. And that's like pretty clear, I guess, to me as somebody that cooks a lot. I wonder, like, is that not clear to a lot of people who are like, if I just keep buying these products, surely at some point I will ascend to the tier of this kind of self-actualization?
I think it's now I don't know if they're like, oh, I finally like I bought my last like KitchenAid stand mixer and now I finally ascended to like make 8 sourdough breads at once. Like, I don't think that's what most people think so. Nor do I think that they underestimate how much time it exists. Like, we all know how much time and energy it takes to cook food. We all know that it's not like, oh, I have X, Y, and Z. Like, sometimes you have to plan in advance for like what you need to make. And it's, I don't think the audience, we've talked about this in media studies where it's this idea of like, you have two camps, right? The audience are mindless zombies versus the audience are like critical thinkers of what they watch. And I very much fall into the audience is smart enough to tell what they are watching. I don't think people are mindlessly absorbing this content. This is very much an outdated model of thinking about the audience. And it's very condescending to its audience of like, you can't think for yourself. But I do think it provides what this content does. I don't think people are underestimating how much time it takes to cook, but I think it provides an outlet for imagining like, if I had this time, I could make this thing. And that's a source of comfort.
I also think it's not an entirely foreign concept. Oh, I'm sure we've all either experienced this or know someone who has experienced this of once I buy the very expensive laptop, then I can write the great American novel. Once I buy the fancy tablet, then I can become a cartoonist. Like it's.
Yeah. I mean, well, I've experienced that too. It's like once I get the nice sewing machine, I'll actually learn how to like mend my own clothes. Like, again, we're all not immune to this. Like, I would very much like to make this very clear to whoever listens to this. It's like everyone falls for this, even the people who study it. Like, it's not, don't beat yourself up for like, oh, I fell for it. Like that doesn't exist. Okay. Like everyone, this type of content is designed, no matter what it is, not just Tradwife content, just content in general is designed to invoke an emotion in you. And whatever that emotion is, that's what the creator wanted, right? Like no one creates things and just being like, oh, okay. Like I'm sure no one will like engage with this or like won't feel anything. We'll just be neutral about it. Like that doesn't exist, right? All content is designed to fill some aspect of what you want, right? Like I like games because it gives me an outlet to explore creativity. I like drawing because it gives me an outlet to express how I'm feeling, whatever that is. And that exists online and it exists in this type of content too. So it's not like I'm better than you because I can recognize what this type of thing is showing me. Like, no, that's elitism and that doesn't exist. Like, just get rid of that mentality and recognize that like this content is designed to invoke something in you. And however you choose to engage with that, that's what ends up mattering the most.
Well, let's get into that, actually. You say it's designed to invoke something in you. How is this propaganda and what is its purpose?
Okay, so again, I'm sure you guys who listen to this understand that propaganda is a loaded term. We've talked about it multiple times. This type of content, I would say, is designed to draw on what people are missing, right? It's this time with the family. We are more isolated than we ever are. And then, you know, you add COVID on top of that, which separated a lot of people. And it was a very traumatic event for a lot. You know, losing loved ones, not being able to do what you love, being inside for a very, very long time. Work culture is, for lack of a better word, horrendous. We now exist in a hustle culture where it's like, if I keep working, if I keep doing overtime, if I keep pushing myself, then eventually I'll get to a space where I don't have to do that anymore. And that can be extremely exhausting and draining. And it's like, we live in a housing crisis and a childcare crisis. And it's like, you know, one parent's income is no longer enough to sustain a family. It can barely like sustain one person who lives in an apartment in a city where rent is like $5,000 for a closet space. It's designed to play on all of these things where it's like, look at how much nicer it is to be away from the city, to be with your family, to have time and energy to cook, to not have to worry about where your next meal is coming from because it's growing outside in your backyard. Like you can engage with the nature and you can engage with the world around you and you're not stuck inside all the time. It's designed to play on all of these feelings. And I will say, again, I am not immune to this stuff either. These are feelings that I've had, like being, you know, a young professional. It's all of these things where it's like, I want time to relax and to cook and to spend with my family and to not worry about like, am I going to have enough money to like go and out and do the things that I want, to buy myself the nice things that I want? Am I going to have a house over my head? You know what I mean? Like it's all of these fears that play on, especially for younger generations, where the future is no longer guaranteed for us. I would say that's what this content is trying to play on. It's these hopes and desires and fears of a younger generation where the promises of our parents aren't promised anymore. And it's only accessible to the wealthy few who have time and money and capital and resources already.
Yeah, it should be noted that Ballerina Farms has many babysitters for her, like 22 kids or however many she
has. That's the funny. Like anybody who is in a committed relationship, I basically don't know anyone in our generation where both parties don't work, right? and then you can, right? We were talking about earlier, like, can you cook a full meal when you come home? Like, I've done it, but oh my God, are you tired?
But it's like,
right?
Who wants to?
You eat dinner and then you crash. And if you have kids... it's out. You're just
It's over. Again, I'm very lucky that it's like I can come home and come to, you know, cooked meal. But again, it's because of my living situation. Like I don't live alone and I know that there's going to be food in the fridge for me. And it's this type of comfort that I take, you know, I have a lot of happiness for, but it's something I recognize as a privilege. It's like not many people have that where they can say, you know, I can come home and I can find food in the fridge and I can, you know, come home and I can take 10 minutes to myself and I don't have to worry about immediately doing laundry, right? Like I have support. And it's all of these different things that this content really plays on is, do you have support? Look at me. I'm a mother, but I have support from my husband and I have support from my family. And it's, you know, all of these things play on people's fears and desires of like, I just want to have a space that's me. I want to have something that I can call mine.
Self-actualization.
That's it. That's the name of the game, right? Like, if so much of society requires you to give up a lot of yourself, having a space to call your own becomes a privilege.
I have to say, like, you've been saying over and over, like, you're not immune to this. And I've been, like, nodding my head. It's because, for a long period of my life, I was subject to the dude version of this, which is fetishizing my fetish item. My consumer fetish item were firearms and old firearms. So I have a lot of old rifles from like World War II days that I don't shoot, that like I should probably get rid of. And it's like, I don't even know what I was thinking, right? Like, I'll be a collector. I'll be a cool guy that's like, this is my hobby. And then after about 5 years of that, you're like, this gun oil stinks. And I hate fucking going to the range. And like, I don't want to do, like, that is the dude. And people, right, are very dismissive about it. They like, dudes will just call it, yeah, you're LARPing. Right?
Yeah,
like,
Alec, you got to get rid of your trad gun and get new guns.
I am a trad gun guy. I'm a
trade your trad guns for the new and latest KitchenAid model.
I've got a KitchenAid sand mixer. I love it. Don't even talk
also,
to me.
I'm going to say this. I gave up my KitchenAid. I'm now a Brevia stand.
Oh, you
man.
Went up. You
I
went
did.
Up.
I did.
Alec, what you're saying about like the male version of this, you're right. There is something, and it like it's been lingering and growing as we see, you know, in this past election cycle. But I remember reading the Art of Manliness blog when I went off to college because I was like, I'm drifting, I'm aimless. Like, what does it mean to be a man now that I'm 18 years old?
By the way, we're talking about low taxes, old life.
No. That's the alphabet of manliness. Oh, and that's that's not low tax.
See, now I'm learning something. I have no idea what this shit
that
is.
Was low tax? Low
can I curse on this podcast?
Yeah, of course you can.
Okay, great.
Low tax was something awful. Maddox was Art of Manliness.
Maddox, I'm sorry.
Maddox was satirizing the alphabet, the art of manliness. So Maddox, Alphabet of Manliness, Art of Manliness was just like Manosphere blog that told me, like, if you want to be a man, find a mentor and write them a letter asking them to be your mentor. Memorize Rudyard Kipling poems like old men used to do. Get yourself, go to a barber and get yourself a close razor shave. Is that what it's called?
Oh, like
a straight razor shave.
Yeah.
And like
a hot towel.
Yeah, it was basically like, isn't Mad Men so cool? Isn't Dawn the best? Aren't the Soprano scenes about the therapy session so stupid? Isn't it awesome to go to the strip club? Like that kind of like, what does it mean to be a man? And eventually I was like, what the hell am I doing? This isn't my life.
Squeaky voice nerds being like, don't stand too close to a guy at the urinal. It's gay. By the way, looking back on it, I remember the book that like instructed you never to stand next to another guy at the urinal. And I'm like, this seems like, a lot of like suppressed gay stuff. Right. Where it's like, what are you? Just don't look at his dick. It's not a big deal.
It's
man.
Not just like suppressive.
You're in there to piss.
It's not just suppressive sexuality, but it's also like anything that can question these archaic rules of gender. So like there are older men who refuse to let someone open the door for them. They will just like,
oh, yeah, dude, that's
yeah,
true.
you know.
Yeah.
It's gross. It's nefarious. I'm hoping it's dying out, but it seems to be resurrecting as some really weird thing that I don't quite understand.
Well, it never dies. It just mutates. So Maya, let's get into that, Connor, because that's like perfect. So because I on the dude side, right, I see all the dude versions of this, right? Like just eating raw liver and like all this other nonsense, right? Like so trying to track. Well, like right now, like trying to track all your metrics and like microdosing mushrooms and, you know, like there's a lot of aestheticization and like body modification, I guess. I don't know. Right. Like lifestyle stuff that you as a consumer, you can buy and you can engage in this stuff. To me, the politics are always there. Again, they're subtle, but they're a little bit more overt. And the politics are fucking noxious. And by the way, just like the thing that they're doing is noxious.
Yeah.
It feels a lot worse than cottagecore is what I'm saying. Like if somebody's like, I'll bake a loaf of bread. That's a nice thing to do. If somebody's like, I'm going to eat raw liver. It's like, don't do that. No, don't do that. That's bad.
Yeah. I mean, again, we have to think about performances of gender, right? Like eating raw liver is seen as, you know, I don't know. I guess like being inherently like masculine. I don't know. But it's just,
it's
you know,
so gross.
I mean, look, I stopped eating meat a while ago. I'm sure it's terrible. But again, it's this whole idea of like, it really does come like we live in an image based society. You know, I don't have time to read with all due respect. I don't have time to read your like heartfelt, like if I'm looking at someone's recipe, I don't have time to read your heartfelt like paper on how this was your grandma's recipe. Like, I'm sure it's wonderful and I'm sure it's very sweet, but please just tell me what a degree I have to turn my oven
ingredients
off
list.
To. Yeah, exactly. Jump to recipe, my beloved. But again, it's image based. Like, if I see something I like, then I'd go out and like try to learn more about it, because that's what grabs it. Ooh, flashy. Like, again, we're not immune to pretty pictures, and so that's what matters. Like, when it comes, like, we live in an aesthetics based world where it's like, if you have this thing and this thing and this thing, I can easily decipher who you are. And that's what makes Tradwife content extremely easy to digest, is I already know, like, if there's a stand mixer, a pretty lady in a con dress, and a baby, chances are I already know what to expect. Versus if I see a baby, an Xbox, and like something else, right?
A dad,
like,
wrong.
Yeah. Like, I wouldn't know. Like, the pictures don't go together and I don't know how to interpret it.
Yeah.
So again, it just comes down to like visual cues to show your audience like a very quick shorthand of like, are you going to like this content or not? I mean, it's the same thing when it comes to like movie posters, right? Like, how it's constructed tells you what to expect. Are you watching an action film? Are you watching a noir mystery film? Like, what is it?
You're talking about seeing the images of like there's a woman holding a baby making bread. Those images, you can kind of tell what you're going to get. But sometimes that is not a tradwife. Sometimes that's a witch who found a baby in the woods and they're going to grind their bones to make their bread.
Sometimes it's
she's making the bread out of the baby.
Campaign, you know what I mean? But that's the thing. And again, this method is not foolproof, right?
Right.
Most of the time, like, they're, again, I'm very cautious about putting like blanket statements, right? Because again, there is nuance and there are subtleties and there are like very different things, right? Like, for example, if I'm posting a video of bread online and someone calls me a tradwife, and I'd be like, actually that's incorrect, right? But like, again, visual cues, right? It depends, you know? So I'm cautious to put blanket statements, but yes, there are, most of the time what we see serves as shorthand, and those things can be wrong. But most of the time, they're right of like, what am I expecting? Am I going into like, for example, you're not going into someone who reviews kitchenware to explain to you how a drill works. Like, those are very different things, although they both share the same thing, which is metal. And again, it comes down to visual cues. Who am I going to for this information? What am I looking at? And those things can be wrong, but most of the time they serve to tell us what you're to expect. And if they don't meet your expectations, then great. Or, you know, maybe not, because that's not what you were looking for. But again, visual shorthand.
Do you actually think that the like political valence of the tradwife stuff in broad terms, right, like, is less noxious? Like, if somebody gets excited, look, I mean, there are still mothers, right? There's still people in relationships, those with jobs and without. And if this kind of content makes them feel a little peppier about doing the fucking laundry, well, you know, I mean, I do the laundry in my house, but like, somebody's got to do the laundry. Like, that doesn't seem that evil. Versus like the dude bro content stuff that like I just despise, right? Which seems overtly noxious and evil. But maybe you don't want to like say whether or not it's worse.
I think this whole idea of like America's obsession with the lesser evil does not serve anyone, right? It's this whole idea of like, is this thing like worse or better than the other? That doesn't matter, right? At the end of the day, it's still one thing and one thing only. And that is a return to traditional values. I do think it's interesting, right, that like, again, the audience is critical and they can engage with what they see. And for example, because I know people who are like, I watch this content and it makes me feel happy. That's good for you. And like, I'm happy that this type of content makes you feel that way, right? And if that's where your enjoyment of the thing stops at, that's fine. But you should recognize what this is for what it is. It's not about lesser evils, because that, like, I personally don't believe that there's such a thing as a lesser evil, because that gets us away from the main thing, the main topic, which is a return to conservative traditional values. If a mother finds this type of content to be reassuring, like, oh, I feel happy in my role, then that's good for them. But again,
if they take parenting tips, I mean, dude, I've taken so many parenting tips.
Yeah.
Thank God for all those people that post online.
I mean, that's it. The whole point of online is community, right? A community that for a long time we've seen, like, there is a degradation. I don't know if degradation is quite the right word, but there is a degradation of like in-person community. And so all of this has moved online. And so to find community with other people, with other women, with other men, like, that's important. And that's something I don't want to take away from everyone when it comes to, you know, critically analyzing Tradwives. But I think it's important to recognize what this content is.
You know, it's interesting. We're talking about these communities have moved online. Amongst these Tradwife influencers, they do some collaborations. Ballerina Farms had a collaboration with Nara Smith, who, for those listeners, Nara Smith is a model who also makes her own cereal sometimes. Look up their videos. She's got the TikTok voice of, "Today I decided that I'm going to make homemade Cocoa Puffs for my kids." Like, it's that kind of thing. And it's not too hard to find that there are some commonalities between all these influencers. Namely, they are Mormons, and they are also like pushing that quiverful theology of, we have to have a ton of kids. All these people have a ton of kids. We've got Nara Smith, whose husband is also rumored to be a Christian nationalist. He's also from a family of Mormon models, literally making this aesthetic like very attractive, physically attractive, trying to get people to come into it. We've also got Ruby Frank, also a Mormon, who, hey, what do you know? They abused and emaciated and malnourished their kids. She's now serving 40 to 30 years in prison. And Nurse Hannah, who also Mormon, is being investigated for child abuse for a video that she has since deleted of her kid flinching in a grocery store when they tried to hand him something. And there's videos of them like hitting their kid's hand away when they're trying to reach for food and stuff. So Nurse Hannah is very interesting. She's a LPN, not an RN. So she's technically a nurse, but she has gone on when people say like, "Hey, you're not a real nurse. You're not an RN. She just says, "Those are just letters after a name. They don't mean anything." Like, well, it kind of means where you can work. It kind of means what your education is. The common thread among these Tradwives, sorry, I'm getting so off topic here. The common thread is that these are Mormon influencers who push to have tons and tons of kids. They all have some independent wealth, or they're trying to gain some independent wealth from being an influencer. And then half of the ones that I mentioned all have child abuse allegations or child abuse convictions. So there's something really nefarious going on here.
It's so depressing, man. So sad, dude.
Yeah.
I was just going to ask real quick. The standout to me, Maya, is this, the Estee Williams lady, or Estee, I don't know how you pronounce it, who like, I'm just like, oh, that's the 50s cleavage lady, like, that I keep seeing posted on Twitter. Is she more like, what's her deal?
So again, I haven't really done that much research into her because I was only really looking at one person. So can't comment on that. But her entire thing is interesting, and I would love to do another like analysis of her because she presents a different side, right? Like there's a range of tradwifery. She's definitely on the side that I didn't look into.
She's like domestic suburban 1950s vibe.
Yes, 1950s vibe. Like Mad Men, kind of.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like Bob haircuts and stuff. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But she was the one I think I saw the most, right? Like these fucking Daily Mail articles or whatever. And this is when it transitions like into the actually like overtly political, when it's like, beautiful wife gave up her career so that she could cook and clean at home. Right. And there's just like a lot missing out of that, where she's like, home life is my purpose. Right. And like, you don't have to do, I'm like the perfect housewife and you don't have to do this, but like, I'm choosing to do it. Right. And that like carries with it a very powerful, like, political message. That's like you say, right. Like very, very resonant with like conservatives, and they all take that snippet, right? Like, it's not even her content. It's like the meta conversation about her content, and that will be reproduced like infinite times on everybody's timeline, right?
Yeah. I think it's interesting, right? There are several articles I had read, several video essays also had mentioned this idea of choice. Because again, I love feminist discussions, right? Feminist critiques and all of these different things. And one of them is choice feminism. It's this idea that no matter what choice a woman makes, it is inherently feminist because she is the one that made that decision, right? I have criticisms with this, mainly the fact that it doesn't take into account societal pressures of like how much of a choice, like, you know, are you factoring in these societal expectations, right? Societal expectations, societal boundaries, societal restrictions, right? Because there are like, let's not pretend that for a very long time, women were forced to work in only a limited section of jobs, right? And like, yes, there's a choice to be the working woman, right? But you only had limited options to start with. And I think that's an important distinction to make is for a very long time, women could do not a lot of things. Like, I don't even think for a very long time, like, to see a woman online as an influencer was like in the realm of possibilities, right? And so when we factor in choice, there were several articles that mentioned this whole idea of like retaking back feminist language of talking about choice. Like, I made this decision, right? Like, this is a me choice. And I think, again, and I caution about like when it comes to a woman's agency about certain things, like, yes, like she did make the choice, right? It's this whole idea of like, you can't infer about a person's choice without talking to them. You can only see what is shown on camera. And for example, if Ballerina Farms says like, I made this choice consciously, then she made that choice consciously. Unless you talk to her, you won't know that. And I'm cautioning a lot of people about like assuming what's actually going on through these people's heads, right? Because you will never know. And I think that's a liberty afforded to us by the internet, right? Is like, you will never fully know what goes on behind the camera. You will never fully know what goes on through this person's mind. And so again, I caution when it comes to saying like, oh, but did she really make this choice, right? Like the whole Times article, I have my own criticisms with it. I thought it was illuminating, but I have my own criticisms when it comes to it, right? Because one of the main things that we learn as researchers is to be very careful and respectful with how you present your subject, right? Like you can have all of these inferences, right? But you will never be the final deciding voice, right? Of what you see. And so, and it comes back to this whole like taking back choice, right? There is this rhetoric of choice feminism, and you can be critical about that. But I caution when it comes to saying like, oh, I know better than you. No, you don't. Like you are one person behind the screen.
Now, what you just said right there of we have to be careful of how we present our subject. We can only infer what they're putting out or what they intend from what they're putting out. But we can notice trends.
Yes.
And we can notice that there's an uptick in these influencers. We can notice there's an uptick in how many Gen Z people want to be influencers. There's something that's very appealing about like, hey, look, I'm a billionaire. Unless you do your research into how I made all that money, maybe you can be a billionaire too. But we can also see a connection between the political landscape, J.D. Vance's rhetoric, and his odd obsession with the fertility of women.
Yes. No, that's the thing. You can notice trends, right? And there is a trend within tradwife content as a whole of this return to traditional values, this return to women back at the home, this return to the nuclear family as the center of women's lives, right? Like that is a observable political trend that exists in this type of content. And that's not, you know, no matter what it may be, that is an objective trend to notice. And again, it's this whole idea of when it comes back to looking at the broader like meta commentary surrounding this stuff, because again, I feel like it's very easy to get caught up in these echo chambers online, this like little bubble of a space. But when you pull back, there is like, if you look at our political landscape right now, there is a huge backlash to the strides that women made. And there is a continuous sort of like paternalistic grab of like, I can't control you anymore, so I'm going to do everything I can to make sure I can control you again. And I think that is a well-deserved fear that exists. I mean, we saw it when Roe v. Wade was overturned, right? This idea that like, I can control your body again.
Shit. I mean, a new phrase that is being tossed around and that unfortunately is being heard on college campuses I am close to is your body, my choice. You know, Nick Fuentes is also popularizing this phrase. So, yeah, that specter of male chauvinism, of feminine control has not left.
It hasn't. And it's interesting when you look at this like broader commentary, because I feel like when you look at tradwives in of itself, right, it's very like feminine focused. And then when you pull back, you can really see this like broader misogynistic language that surrounds like, oh, this is what you deserve to do. Like, even if you look in the comments on some videos, there's many who are like, there's not many women like you anymore. Like, you're an example for what women should be, right? It's this whole idea of like, because women have made so many strides, now that you no longer can categorize women as like, oh, the thing that lives in your house and makes you food and does your laundry, there's a huge backlash to it. And a lot of people want to take that away again. They want to take away women's freedom to work, to make decisions about their body, to be something that doesn't revolve around family. And this isn't to say that, like, if women choose to be wives and to stay home and, you know, have, like, to value family, those aren't bad things, right? There's this, I feel like, even within feminist discussions, there's just a lot of talk surrounding, like, even going back to, like, the 90s, right? This whole, like, pitting working women against mothers. And the whole, like, it just echoes larger sentiments of, like, that's not your enemy. The other woman sitting next to you is not your enemy. It is broader society that's trying to tell you you can only live one way. That's the enemy.
I'd be cautious, right? I mean, as a leftist or whatever, right? Like, I'm always cautious at fetishizing choice because it's a liberal compunction and it's not necessarily always correct, right? But look, I'm not a woman, right? And it's very clear to me from statistics that women that live in societies that have more choices end up living better and probably more fulfilling lives and certainly can avoid the worst aspects of interactions with society and with men. Right. And to the degree that those political movements in the United States and abroad now are seeking to curtail and claw back some of that choice, it's very clear to me, you know, again, not to make a mountain out of a molehill. After all, these are TikTok videos. Right. But the alienation that's being played on that is the driving feature behind, it sounds like, why this kind of stuff is resonant. Certainly in the male versions of this, I can quickly identify that. And I can tell you it's absolutely true, right? In male alienation is the driving feature behind noxious political trends. To the degree that that's happening in this kind of more female space, there's a kind of a meta danger, right? That abortion is lost forever in the United States. But there's also like a smaller one, right? I mean, my real fear with this kind of tradwife stuff, and the reason that it turns me off so much, is that, like, I imagine a young woman that's influenced by this into, you know, getting into a relationship or maybe even getting married without just giving it enough time to, like, suss out whether that relationship is good, or like putting up with like an abusive boyfriend or spouse because she has it. And, you know, I'm not trying to infantilize women, but let's be honest, right? This kind of stuff does affect us, right? Like putting up with something too long because we have an idea of, like, well, you know, if I work hard enough and bake enough bread, right, like my life will be good. And it's like, well,
It's funny what you just said about having more choices can lead to, you know, some women liberation. There's a fantastic book out there called Why Women Have Better Sex Under Socialism by Kristen Goetze, which is, I mean, it's a scandalous title to get you to, like, oh, what the heck? Let me read this. And it's not really about, like, improving your sex life. It is about real cases of countries that offer economic liberation. Like, women can, like, have a lot more autonomy over their lives and they don't have to rely on marriages or boyfriends in order to, like, advance themselves. So it's a great book. Check it out.
I mean, the choice that always comes to my mind is the choice to leave your abusive ass husband, right? Yeah. Like, that one fucking really matters, right?
Yeah.
Connor, talk about circling back to the Texas Republican Party and the fucking covenant marriage thing.
And right? No-fault divorces, yeah. Yeah,
they're literally trying to do that, by the way, right?
Like, no, and it's, again, it's this whole idea of, like, let's not pretend that, like, women have made a lot of strides within the past, you know, several decades, right? But I think a lot of people forget how recent a lot of these changes are, right? Like, this, you know, my generation versus my parents' generation, right? Like, what my mother could do versus what I can do. It's, again, it's this idea of, like, oh, you can go out and do all of these different things. And it's this whole, like, if you are tied to the nuclear family, right, you are guaranteed safety and you are guaranteed a loving relationship and all of these different things. Although there's, like, that's the promise, right? Of, like, you are valued and you will be protected and you will be loved, right? But that's not always the case. I think it's very important to recognize that a lot of the strides that women have made are very recent. The ability to, what is it, like, to classify, like, marital rape, right? For a lot of states in the United States, that was not, you know, that didn't exist. And for a lot of it, it was on the books until, like, 1980s. It's important to recognize that this backlash to women's liberation exists. And a lot of the ways in which they soften the blow is making it seem like it's this traditional lifestyle is idyllic and it's nicer than what you currently have. the main message that I want to give out is no one is immune to what you see online. You are not, it's that one Garfield meme where it's like, you are not immune to propaganda. Yeah. Because it's, again, propaganda is designed to play on people's hopes and fears and desires, right? And it's this whole idea of like, you could have this if only you give up this, right? You can have time and money and energy if only you give up your ability to go to the work, right? Because look at how much you hate work, right? Look at how much you go and you barely have a paycheck. You barely have enough time to go on vacation. And you barely have enough time to spend with your family or your loved ones or your spouse or whatever it is, right? Or your cat, for example.
Talk about resonant messages. Your job fucking sucks and nobody likes it. Everybody raises their hand, right?
Like, yeah. How many people like their jobs? No, like barely one or two hands go up, right?
One hand goes halfway up, looks around, goes back down.
And like puts it back down, right? Like, again, I find a lot of like satisfaction in work. Ever since I was young, right? It's this whole idea of like, I had my parents tell me like, do something you like, right? And like, don't rely on a man to save you, right? It's like one of the best advice that I've ever received when I was a kid was my mom telling me, don't date until you have your own financial income source, right? It's this whole idea of like, make sure that you are secured before anyone else. Don't rely on other people to guarantee your security. And I've taken that to heart in a lot of ways, but like, let's, you know, work culture sucks and it takes a lot out of people. And so when the tantalizing idea of like, you can have a house and you can have food and home cooked food and you can have money becomes really appealing to people.
I don't know. I kind of just want everything to flip and I would love to be a kept husband. Like I just like
100%.
I don't want to go to work. I want to take daddy's little helpers with some Jim Beam every day and just be like totally pilled out. That's
check
what
it out,
I
dog.
Want.
I live that life.
I don't know. I don't know. Like, you guys aren't in fandom spaces, but the whole, like, My Little Meow Meow is, like, exactly that. It's just a fictional element.
What is this?
I don't get paid to go into that. If you want, that's an extra charge. I will explain that, but later.
Fuck it. Call me Meow Meow. Call me whatever. Just, like, buy me video games and feed me. Like, that's all I want.
See, this is how you know that there's, like, a huge gap in generational gap. Yeah.
What's the cure Min to male loneliness? Make me your little meow meow, please.
Min Yoonji of BTS. None of these words have any. I know what BTS is.
That's that band.
Well, that's a start.
That's that K-pop band. I am closing this tab. I do not need to know anything more about this. I'm not interested. Like, I will say, right? Like, if we're actually worried about like the politics of this, I am reminded that like nobody has time to do any of this shit, right? Like with the gun bros, you spend thousands of dollars, you have all these fucking guns, and then you don't go shooting, and you're like, well, I still have the guns, right? And if you go crazy, but mostly they just sit in your closet, right? And then like one impediment to like the politics of like trad wifing is nobody has the fucking time to actually do this shit. So,
well,
like,
I will say this too. It's like, don't discount young women. A lot of them recognize what this is and a lot of them have discussions about it. And a lot of them subscribe to feminist rhetoric where it's like, no, I don't want to live the life that my parents did because I know what that means. I know the rights that I have aren't guaranteed. And so I'm going to fight for them. I think a lot of when it like, and again, I feel like it's important to recognize, like, when it comes to like how much of a political impact this can have, we don't know, right? This is a relatively new trend. And like most internet trends, they probably won't last very long. And so I think it's important to recognize, like, if anything, I would classify this as a political flashpoint, right? Like, this is a big thing to get people talking, and then it'll probably recede within like the next year or so. Like, honestly, if you look at it, the Google trends for tradwife has decreased since June, right? Like when this first reached its peak. So I think it's important to like recognize what the politics of it is, but don't get distracted from the real enemy, right? The real enemy is like the old 80-year-olds who are trying to take away your right to go to work, right? The right for you to decide what you get to do with your life. Like, can you make decisions about yourself medically? Like, that's really what this is. Yes, we can have all these discussions about tradwives, but don't forget what is really happening. This is a political flashpoint to get you talking, and it can be a great way to like, oh, what are these things trying to tell me about? Like, what is society trying to tell me about like women's roles again? Society wants me to go back in the home, and that's not what I want to do. But don't forget what's really happening, right?
Yeah. Two quick things. One, Alex, to what you just said, I love the idea of a trad gun guy just being like, Antifa's in our yard. Fetch me my blunderbuss.
My blunderbuss.
Oh my God.
there were like there are like a black powder boomers. That's like an even different kind of guy, but there are very, very few of them because it's very impractical.
Like loading a musket. And yes. It's like, oh man, I'm going to kill this blue haired they, them in my yard.
I still like, again, right? Like it's the dude version. Like, I love this content, right? Like, by the way, I think cottagecore shit is very cute. I have to like those. Like,
no, I will say this. I love it. Like, again, I love, if anyone who knows me will know my personal style ranges, right? But I love cottagecore. I love gothic aesthetic. I love old vintage aesthetic. Like, at the end of the day, personal style is what it says in the title. It's personal. You take elements of things that you like, right? And again, fashion is cyclical. You take elements from the past and silhouettes that you like, and you repurpose them and you remake them. Yeah. And again, in a consumerist hellhole that we live in, a lot of people are seeking something to define them. And I'm, you know, I'm not immune to that. I also want to find things that define me as me. It is what you make of it at the end of the day.
You know, we're getting close to time here, but I want to end on a somewhat positive note, because you said, Maya, don't discount these young women. Like, they're talking about this. They see it for what it is. You, in your paper, you did mention that there are counter propaganda elements popping up against tradwifery. Can you speak on that?
Yeah. So, I mean, again, with the video essayists, a lot of these video essayists serve as a space for discussion. Don't discount the YouTube sphere, right? Like, again, because a lot of communities have moved online, so is public discourse. And a lot of where public discourse takes place is in comment sections. And a lot of YouTube essayists who discuss these things serve as a space to discuss and, you know, hash out what are we seeing, right? And so a few video essays have talked about exactly what I've said, right? I've used them as references as well, where it's the politics surrounding leisure, who gets to have leisure, what do these visual aesthetics mean, feminist choice, and how are we defining choice within like current 21st century society, and all of these different things. And in comment sections, you will see a lot of this where it's like, I'm a single mother and I talk, you know, I look for this content for X, Y, and Z reason, but I recognize what this is. Or it's, and these spaces of public debate are increasingly important, and counter propaganda in the form of video essays where they discuss and break down what they see is also extremely important. Public discourse, topics aren't one-dimensional. There are many different angles and many different takeaways, right?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, I was just going to say, like, Connor, I would love to own, like, a wheel lock pistol, right? But why? Is that, by the way, that's like 16th century technology. It's like a spinning flint thing inside of a barrel. It doesn't make any sense. There's no reason why anyone would have this, but it's very cool, right? Like,
the only gun culture aesthetic that I'm really stoked on is when it's like a blend of fantasy and guns. I'm using my flintlock pistol to shoot down a dragon that's attacking my fortress or something.
I thought you were going for something else. I thought you were saying, like, with this I will load in my magic spell, like the whole wizard Glock that I've seen online. Like, I love that. That's very
fun.
The outlaw
star thing was always super fun. The bullets, always love that.
Those are
it's
cool.
Very fun. Very unique.
All right. Well, that about wraps it for today's episode of Propagandos. Maya, thank you so much for coming on and discussing your research. Until next time, excelsior, Propagandos, and keep your eyes on the skies. That's our outro. That
cute.
We do.
Bye.
See, some people like it.
we're hanging up the call now.
All right.
Yeah.
Bye.